Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
Another bonus broadcast this week. In case you'd like to spend some more time with your humble host, there's video of this, that link in the description box. So Natalie and I have been watching Impeachment. You guys watch American Crime Story on FX? They did O.J. Simpson in season one. They did the Versace murder in season two. Now they're doing Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton, which was one of the big stories of the 1990s. It's trash. It's soapy. I'm hooked. I have shame. I have thoughts about this particular, we didn't call it a milestone. It's only a milestone because we all remember kind of what was going on in our lives at that time. When I was, you know, going through it, I remember I was a devout, hardcore, you know, Fox News had just started that decade, Rush Limbaugh, Ann Coulter, Republican. And it didn't matter what the Democrats did. Anything Republicans did was better. Like, no matter how awful we are, whatever mistakes we made, at least we're not a Democrat. And we're seeing some of this today. So I had it in for Bill Clinton. I mean, I still think he was kind of a sleazeball. You know, at the very least, the man was a total horn dog who used his position and power, you know, and influence and whatnot. That's kind of my take. They say he was extremely charismatic. No doubt there was probably some good legislation that came out of his presidency. But, you know, I never found him a hugely impressive guy. And so anyway, back then I was like, oh God, he betrayed the office. This is a moral failing. He had an affair or whatever with a 22-year-old intern, betrayed his wife. What a horrible, horrible man. And I was, you know, one of those guys where, you know, impeach, that kind of thing. And so here I am, and it's the year 2022, and, you know, I am way out of the Fox News bubble. I even wrote a book, $5 off today, about it, called Confessions of a Former Fox News Christian. And I'd reverse engineer what it was like back then. Because back then it was privileged white guy against the entire world that was out to take away his freedoms. And everything was, you know, I was more moral. I was superior in terms of values. My ideals, my religion, my party, I was really the high man on the mountain, even though I was still just a kid, pretty much. I hadn't really grown up yet. And so here I am watching this play out. I know much of it is totally dramatized. I know it's sensationalized. It's hard to believe it could be more sensationalized than the actual events were. But I have complex feelings on how it went down. And Natalie and I kind of walked away from where we're 7 episodes in. And we kind of walked away with the same perspective. Outside of Bill and Hillary and Monica, why was that story anybody else's goddamn business? I mean, I get they were trying to say that he had done favors, you know, Vernon Jordan to get her a job. And I don't know. Maybe he was just trying to get her out, you know, get her out of the White House, get her out so that the temptation was not there. It's impossible to know intention. But I think to myself, much of Ken Starr's witch hunt, if you can call it that. Now, not that there wasn't wrongdoing, not that there weren't betrayals, not that he didn't lie under oath. That's, you know, all of those are hugely, hugely problematic. But the actual event, what happened? All right. Total horn dog has, I guess you call it, an affair with an intern. Well, who's that between? That's between the parties involved. And we declared it some sort of a moral referendum. The entire presidency has been morally tainted. We have the right to then grab onto or latch onto whatever has happened behind closed doors, whatever this sex scandal might be. And this then becomes sort of, it fuels the torches that we use as we circle and say, aha, the man must be stopped. You know, was he selling secrets to the Chinese? I don't think so. I didn't hear about it, you know. I mean, was he behind an insurrection at the United States Capitol? Didn't happen then. No, I mean, I just look back at it and I think how much of what happened is just a magnifying glass through which we see a monumentally Puritan society, a hypocritically Puritan society, because I'm convinced more and more of the people who are waving their Bibles, like Ken Starr, right, who are Bible banging and chest thumping and talking about moral failings. Yeah, I think many of these people have skeletons, right? They've got issues. There's something going on. You know, nobody's perfect, and I think most everybody has a dark side and a past. You know, whose life isn't? But I think to myself, yeah, all of the shit that went down was really about a private sexual encounter between two adults, right? I mean, even though he's on the public dime, I mean, maybe it could be argued because he's a servant of the people. We hold him to a higher standard. It happened in our house, the White House. Maybe. How much of it was just, we just get jacked up about anything sex, anything sex-related. I don't know. I have thoughts about this. I have another thought, too. You know, we used to make Monica Lewinsky jokes back in the day because, you know, to us, she was a cardboard cutout, you know. She wasn't a three-dimensional person. She was somebody we thought she was just a climber who was, you know, got infatuated with power and maybe she had her own ends. And of course, I was a Fox News Republican. So I wasn't, you know, I was still like, everybody is guilty. This is all a scandal. And I think to myself at 22, you know, she was legally an adult and responsible for her actions. You know, she lied. She covered up. She did all these things. She was responsible in that way. She perpetrated something that was damaging. It was damaging to a marriage. It was damaging in so many ways to the integrity of the office. Okay, I get that. And I also think that Monica Lewinsky was a victim. And I don't think in the binary thinking culture, many people like this sort of nuance. It drives them crazy. Oh God, she saw a powerful man. It was the president. She's an idiot. She's a slut. She's whatever they want to call her. She's the, you know, she deserves whatever. She's got it coming. And then there are other people who say she was totally seduced. She was just a child. She didn't really know the difference. She was essentially groomed by the most powerful and most seductive man in the country at that time, arguably. And so they just fall either or, you know, A, B, black, white, yes, no. And I just think, no, no, no. Both of these things can exist. You can look at somebody who's like, yeah, I mean, she's responsible. You know, you made bad decisions and there were consequences. At the same time, the level of character assassination, you don't want to see someone's life ruined, really. their reputation. They become a punchline. People are monumentally cruel. She has no privacy at all. They're stalking at her house. They're writing all sorts of stuff about her. All of her friends are coming forward, and they seize an opportunity for their moment in the spotlight. And you think, no, I mean, this is actually an unjust response to what was a human mistake. I can totally see, you know, you get in that situation. And now at 50, almost 54, I think 22 is a kid. I mean, if you'd seen me at 22, I was a kid. I was a kid, right? I got married, my first marriage. I got married at 22. I mean, I was an adult. I was a year into my career, my new career. And I was an adult, but in so many ways, I was a fucking minnow. You know, shielded from so much, overwhelmed. I thought I knew everything. I didn't know anything. I had so much life yet to live. And I look and I think, you know, 22-year-old Monica Lewinsky was a product of her actions and decisions. She was also a kid, relatively speaking. And I can totally see how she gets swept up in something like this. Anyway, I found it an interesting conversation. I found it an interesting conversation about how we treat people in the public eye and how this Puritan country gets so wild about sex. And I'll tell you who was the most freaky about it. The evangelical conservatives, the Ken Starr types. Right? When we got through the hearings, which were supposed to be about Whitewater real estate dealings, what did Ken Starr end up making it about? Now, I haven't seen the rest of the series, but I know the story. He ended up making it about getting a blowjob in the Oval Office or wherever, right? So he went from here, and apparently he didn't have too much to nail Whitewater down. Oh, shit, here's sexual immorality, quote-unquote, immorality over here. Well, now, that's perhaps even a greater failing. It's a betrayal of the country before the eyes of men and God. And that's what he focuses on. It's extremely telling to me how these sort of buttoned-up evangelical Puritan types have an obsession with sex. And I can't help but wonder if it speaks to some sort of a repressed, pent-up desire they have. Like, they condemn it out there because they genuinely feel it in here, and so they're kind of preaching to themselves, you know? No, I mean, I look at the story, and even though I'm white, it's trashy, and it's a soap opera, and it's a, you know, it's, oh, yeah, I know it, I'm guilty. It did provide us a moment to talk about, well, how much of this is any of our damn business? All right? I think if he cheated on Hillary, that's between him and Monica and Hillary. Hey, right? And the rest of us decided this is our domain. Oh, he's paid by taxpayer money. Okay, well, thank you very much. Now we have even supposedly more justification to say this is our domain, when the truth was it was a tryst that happened privately. I don't know. I think it's interesting. And I have, over the years, developed a lot more sympathy for Monica Lewinsky to see someone. Are you the product of your worst mistake? Was she young and impressionable? Did she deserve what happened to her? And do I, you know, see her doing TED Talks and stuff reflectively going back those decades to deal with it, you know, to acknowledge it, to talk about the societal pressures that arose out of it, how it affects people, how it affects we treat each other, how much worse might it have been today when we have high-speed internet? Back then, you know, we had Prodigy and AOL and CompuServe on a 2400 modem. You know, everything took a year and a half to load up. Imagine how quickly scandal spreads now. Imagine. Facebook, was Facebook invented yet? I don't think so. When did Facebook come out? Like 2005, right? Imagine if Facebook and Twitter had been around when this stuff happened. Oh, God. I don't know. I've just been thinking about it. At the end of the day, I think it's important we not lose our compassion, right? I mean, of all the hard targets there are in this world who deserve our condemnation, Monica Lewinsky, really? Really? Is that where we're going to focus? Is that the object of our ire? Does she deserve that? No. Yeah, there's a lot of hard targets out there that do deserve our ire. I had somebody ask in the chat or something, what do you have against Ben Shapiro? I can't even answer the question. I can't even get the words. You know what it takes to be in opposition to Ben Shapiro as a moral human being? All you have to be is mildly observant. Okay. We're just hanging out here, okay? We're just hanging. Is it Italia on the switchboard?
Otilia, yes.
Forgive me. Say it again.
Otilia.
Otilia. Wonderful. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
I just wanted to call and say thank you for just being a great host of your program, but also just helping me on my own journey to kind of think about where I am, you know, spiritually, because I'm not comfortable calling myself an atheist, but I don't feel connected to being a Christian either. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, thank you for the encouragement. Ultimately, I don't care what you call yourself either, I think, because you just need to live life on your terms, you know, stay curious, make every day a discovery, you know, seize the moments. And if we learn something new, we'll grab onto that. Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks for calling. See you later. No, that's awesome. I am on a journey, and aren't we all? Rich from Rochester, New York. Are you with me?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm excellent, brother. What's going on?
All right. I'm an atheist, and I just got to thank you for your all your contributions to the atheist community.
I think you
play an important and pivotal role. But the thing that I come from a very religious family. I mean, I don't know if you've ever experienced it, but my family is so religious that we'll be sitting at the dinner table. And just to let you know, I'm a black man, you know, and it's deep, but gospel music will start being sung. Before you know it, we are having testimonials and everything. If we have a gathering of our family, that's how it'll go. It's that, you know, and I'm assuming you come from the same sort of background. But one of the things
it's hardcore, Go ahead.
Fantastic family. I love my family. They're great, but they can't let go of that. But the thing is, they need trying to explain to them that you don't have to believe in something. Their answer to me to atheism sometimes is, well, Rich, you got to believe in something, don't you? And I'm sitting up there and I think, and I say, not really. And trying to have that conversation with them. And, you know, I don't have it much because we unfortunate in this sense that as funny as they are, we do have a deep love for each other and there's a respect and they allow me to be who I am. But every once in a while, that conversation comes up, you know. And just, I don't know, have you thought about when someone tells you, you must believe in something, have you given that any thought?
Well, I usually start by asking them, you know, I want to make sure we're talking about the same thing because I have a position on this. I'm going to ask them, what do you mean? You have to believe in something, Seth. And I ask them, well, what do you mean by something? You know, because something can be a lot of, I believe in a great many things. What do you mean? And it usually comes back to a higher power, something bigger than yourself, etc., you know. But I always want to make sure that I'm talking about something specific, and I want to make sure I'm nailing them down so they don't get away with a broadly general term that allows the goalpost to move, you know, so that they never get nailed down. You know what that's like, you know.
You feel like the peanuts, and you're about to kick the damn ball, and they pull the ball. There you go, right in your ass.
Yeah, you have to believe in something. But, you know, I think the honest answer to that is I believe in a great many things. I believe in science and the scientific process as far as, you know, trying to experiment in the world to find out whether or not it is reasonable to believe in a God. And while I'm here on this earth, I believe in love. I love my people. I believe in having a self-generated sense of purpose. I believe in making the world a better place. I believe in spending time with those I care about and laughter and bonding and enjoying, you know, good stuff, good food, good time, good memories. So, you know, I believe in a great many things. I just, before I will stop and believe in a deity, in some sort of a divine presence, I simply need the evidence, you know, that evidence enough to convince me that there is one. And, you know, that's how I approach it. It's never satisfying to them because they're not asking because they genuinely, you know, are interested in changing their perspective. They're trying to fix me. So honestly, those conversations, you're not going to change their mind, I would wager. But I think, you know, first challenge them. What do you mean by something? Well, I'm in a null position. I don't see the evidence. I'm not convinced. And if one day I do see the evidence, I would be open to the idea. But until then, I believe in living a truthful life. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think you're right, you just made me think of a conversation I had the other day. You know, the same thing. Well, don't you believe in the power of prayer? You know, because you know everybody's praying for Ukraine, or you know, they're sending up their prayer warriors. You know, on my Facebook page, and can you pray for this or you can pray for that? And I ask them, how about all the other prayers, these previous prayers that you have every day to guard against all these things that you're asking for prayer for now? I said, don't you see where you pray every day, you go to bed, you pray, Lord, watch me, you watch over me, guide me, protect my family and everything, protect the world and all this stuff. And then all these things happen, and then you got to pray to God again. I said, at what point do you realize that this prayer stuff is not working? And
I see prayer like I see the casino billboard. When you drive by a casino billboard, you never see the loser. John X lost $15,000 on, you know, Dukes of Hazzard slots. Yay! Congratulations, confetti. You never see the losers, right? Meanwhile, when you drive by the casino, there's a different wing or amenity or something because people are losing their shirts in the casinos. And, you know, but only the winners, only the guy who had the lucky pull and got 10 grand, you know, in coins or whatever. Only that person makes the billboard. Prayer's the same way. You know, they're going to scan the horizon. And if they see any inkling of anything that looks like a fortuitous event, they're going to ascribe give credit to the divine. My friend, I think it's important you make your position known. I think it's in good faith. Say, you know, this is where I'm at. But I wouldn't pursue a deeper conversation unless you sense they are genuinely interested in understanding who you are. And if they are, if they're listening at all, I say go for it. But if they're pawing at you with that nauseatingly condescending, trying to fix you kind of thing, you don't have to spend that. It'll drive you crazy, man. It will you crazy. Okay, Rich?
Yep, thank you.
All right. Anything else?
No. Oh, I could talk for hours, but you have other callers.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm gonna grab the next line in the switchboard. We'll see you later. Okay.
Goodbye.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody says something that's wrong, yeah, counter it. No, I actually disagree with this. The data is not here. In fact, here's what the data says. My position is this. Right. What were we talking about the other? Oh, there's a draconian abortion law that's going through Oklahoma. And it just passed the House. I don't know if it'll get through the Senate. But a bunch of conservative congressmen, most of them dudes, have just voted to extremely restrict the reproductive choices of women. And so obviously in this state, pro-life state, people are talking about how we need to preserve the sanctity of life. And it came up in a conversation. And respectfully, I said, well, I take a different point of view here. Because I don't think it's anybody else's business. Why in the world have we given permission to a bunch of strangers, most of them dudes, why do we give them permission to essentially crawl into the uteruses of totally unfamiliar women and tell them what to do with their, hell, even if they were, if they weren't, well, how did, why did we give them this permission? If God cares that much about the life of a fetus, why would an omnipotent God not jump into the scenario and put a stop to it? Make his or her desires directly known. Do not do this. If, in fact, it is murder of a baby, would that still not be between the pregnant woman and God? It betrays a massive lack of confidence in their own deity. Essentially, they're saying God can't handle it. So we are charged to go out with our placards and our signs and go out and stack the laws and do this stuff. We have to do this in the name of God. I think some of it may be masturbatory. I think they enjoy the feeling of being a crusader for righteousness in God's army, and then they get to go back and talk about the good they have done in the world. I think much of it is rooted in ignorance. I wrote an entire chapter on abortion and confessions, talking about how most evangelicals couldn't identify a human fetus from the fetus of a dozen other life forms if you held a gun to their head. They don't understand the reproductive processes, and they're totally unaware of the irony that the intelligent designer that they worship has put together a reproductive system that essentially ejects roughly half of all fertilized eggs before they come to term, which would make Yahweh the most prolific abortion doctor of all time. Here is another story in Oklahoma. Hang on, I gotta grab this. He mentioned Ukraine. I got to grab this story. Hang on. I think I sent the link to myself so I would not forget. I have Google Calendar instead of a memory. Sorry about that. Hang on. Oklahoma man returns home after carrying a cross through Ukraine, as reported. Keith Wheeler is known for traveling around the world with a cross. For the last 40 years, Wheeler spent the last week traveling through towns in Ukraine, some of which he doesn't know the name of. God provided me a place to sleep in Lviv, and he lists some other cities that I'm not going to butcher with my pronunciations. He said his first night was a life-changing experience as he sat in a bomb shelter surrounded by families and strangers who were trying to survive the night. Anyway, this dude dragged a cross around Ukraine. People died anyway. People lost limbs anyway. People were lined up in the streets and some summarily executed anyway. But he went and took a cross. And he came back and gets news time. Who thought this was a great news story? Who thought this was an inspirational story? And why in the world? Why in the world would he believe that dragging a method of execution through a war-torn part of the world is a good idea? I just don't understand. More of your calls on whatever you want to talk about. We'll take a short break and I'll be right back. Hang on. Lots of good stuff on the horizon next week, Easter weekend, Atlanta, Georgia, the American Atheist National Convention. NanoCon is coming up at the end of June. We've got the Conference on Death, Grief, and Belief in Portland. That's July 15th weekend. I'm trying to keep everything updated on the events calendar. Just go to thethinkingatheist.com/events, and I hope to see you on the road. Continuing this potpourri of calls with our listeners bringing whatever they want to talk about to the table. Marie, hi, thanks for calling. Are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Marie. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm an agnostic atheist from Southwest Missouri, and I was just wondering, I have difficulty explaining the universe. I was wondering what your explanation was, or your... I mean, I know you don't have an explanation, but is it like a multiverse or what?
Wow. Explain the universe?
Yeah, well, answer, I know.
The answer is 42.
40.
I'm sorry. It's a Douglas Adams deal.
So, no, I know.
How do I explain whether or not there is a multiverse or other universes outside this universe? Hell if I know. All I know is that cosmology reveals that the universe originated from a central point and then exploded outward and is expanding. Right. And apparently at one point it's going to then retract again. And we're able to use this expansion model to measure time. But is there a multiverse? Yeah, I have no idea. What's your take?
I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I was born as a Southern Baptist, now an agnostic atheist. I mean, I would like to believe in the multiverse. It satisfies something in me, you know.
What would your multiverse look like?
I don't, you know, like... a series of black holes that are always expanding and retracting, and they're always expanding and retracting the matter in the universe.
Okay. I'll suppose we'll have to wait for the cosmologist and those who are, you know, measuring.
You know,
I saw you hard work
in Springfield, Missouri.
Oh God, that was like 10 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I know you can't give a definitive answer. Do you have a belief or a theory or?
I don't see any evidence for a universe beyond ours, but it's because I simply don't have the capacity to see beyond ours. So my conversations, and we can speak about it in the abstract, like what if, but I have absolutely no idea. I am ill-qualified
to even... And you're okay with that?
Well, I'm not, I don't, nobody likes to say, I don't know, but that's the honest answer.
No, I know.
Where'd the first cell come from? Hell if I know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It makes me crazy. I wish I had the answer. And I think we continue to seek the answer, hoping one day we will find the answer. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Marie. Take it easy. The universe is expanding and expanding and expanding. You guys know that song, don't you? Mark, thanks for waiting on me. Are you there?
Hi, Seth. Good morning. Well, first, I really admire the great work that you're doing. Without exaggeration, I think it might be the most important work anyone can do. But my question to you is... Go ahead.
No. I can't. Those are shoes I cannot fill, brother. But I appreciate the goodwill. Thank you. No, go ahead. What was your question?
You're doing amazing work, and it's super important because I think that, religion or superstition is just a malignant fantasy that ultimately harms everyone.
Well, anyway. I certainly believe that about the theistic religions. I think we line up on that. So what else you got?
Absolutely. Have you ever said something to a believer that opened their mind in any way or gave them pause or reached them? If you have, I'd love to hear it.
This is sort of akin to, have you ever caused an addict to not be an addict? You know, there's a little bit of a challenge in that. I think we want to go in with the magic bullet and have the scenario, the Socratic method, the data, the challenge point, so that they will have that moment of epiphany. It so rarely happens, at least in the immediate. I'll tell you what did happen, and it was somebody who was just sort of watching my activism from the wings, who was a believer and a friend. And I didn't even know they were going through a journey. And, you know, I didn't know kind of where they were, but I just knew they were a churchgoer and a professed and I think a loyal Christian. And I asked somebody the question publicly, and he was privy to it. He was kind of watching it happen. I think it may have happened on social media. I said, do you believe that the biblical character of Abraham was a heroic Bible character? Yes, absolutely. Abraham was a great and wonderful man. Do you believe she was chosen by God and is someone that we here, even in the 21st century, should admire? Yes, absolutely. You know, Abraham is an admirable man, a man of God. Okay, so if God came to you the way he came to Abraham, and he ordered you to execute your child to demonstrate loyalty and obedience, would you do that? And people blanch. They stop. Well, he didn't kill Isaac. You know, that's usually the first thing that comes out. I'm like, yeah, but right up to the very end, he was committed. So committed that the angel had to stay his hand with the blade. So if God came to you and gave that order to kill one of your children as an act of loyalty and obedience, would you kill your baby? Would you kill your child? That, to me, is one of the best ways to draw a circle around the rampant immorality of the Christian Bible, and you begin to see people having to make a moral judgment outside of the book that they have been declaring as a requirement for morality. Well, no, I'd never hurt my child. I'd rather God punish me. I couldn't do that.
Right.
I've had a few people say they would. It's terrifying. If God told me to kill my child, I mean, I would have no choice, knowing that we would all be in heaven, but one has to be obedient. I mean, I was just horrified when I heard that answer. But that's been, I think, one of the more interesting responses, a scenario where people are asked to make a choice that emulates a Bible hero of theirs. Would they act in the way they acted? In this case, I would certainly hope not. That answer your question?
Thanks so much.
I appreciate your call, Mark.
Well, that's a good one.
All right. All right. See you later. Somebody else responded, do I get to pick the child? It was a dark, dark joke. It was a dark, dark joke. Jaden. Hi, Jaden. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hey, Jaden. Seth.
All right. What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, I have a buddy and his dad. Me and him talk a lot about hardcore Christianity. I was just calling in to ask your thoughts about it. I know you have a Christian background, and I just wanted to know what you think about hardcore Christianity pushing Christians towards atheism or some other form.
No, there is a lot of evidence that the fundamentalist, the wackadoodle, crazy, hardline evangelicals are actually helping to drive people out of the church, especially the 35 and under crowd. And I think that's interesting. I mean, they're doing a tremendous amount of damage in the culture, but an ancillary benefit to that is there are a shit ton of people who were going to church and they're like, I don't want any part of this. I don't want to judge people. I don't want to take away people's rights. I'm not interested in any of this hellfire and damnation. Screw this. We're out. You know what? I'll go out and be a Christian on my own terms, and I'll just love Jesus. And they just walk away, you know? COVID has helped as well. You know, we saw people with a great excuse not to have to get up on Sunday morning, not to get dressed, not to drive down there and go through it all. You found a lot of people then became more detached and realized, hey, I kind of enjoy having my weekend back. And in fact, now that I'm out, I realize I'm actually doing really good without church. Maybe I don't need it. So I do think the hardliners are driving mainstream moderate Christians away, and they are panicking. And I think churches are trying to, in some cases, evolve to try to bring them back to writing books on the subject. Go ahead.
How do you think they could do that? How do you think they could evolve?
They have to be less Christian, if I may. Right? In order for Christianity to attract people to Christianity, it has to be less and less about Christianity. Right? That's why you see the pastors, you know, the ones who just sort of white out all of the hellfire stuff and decide they're going to talk about happy, clappy, motivational, you are special in the eyes of God, be who you want to be, you are loved, those sermons, right? They're doing that sort of, pat on the back, generic, vanilla, motivational stuff because they're not going to go and preach the Old Testament. You know, it's going to have to be a cultural religion, and it's in many ways has been. It's the music you listen to, it's the t-shirts you wear, it's the friends you have, it's the activities you do, but it's not about theology. And I think Christian churches, to survive, are going to have to ironically evolve more and more away from the core tenets of their own religion. Christian churches, to remain relevant, are going to have to be less and less Christian. That's just my take.
All right, perfect. Thank you, Seth.
All right, see you later. I don't know. I'm not Yoda on this stuff. What do you think? What do you think the church is going to do to adapt? I mean, if you practice the kind of Joel Osteen Christianity today, and you tried that in the, 11th century, they would have burned your ass alive as a heretic. If you had dared to say, well, I don't know if Moses existed, but I think there's some great stories in the Old Testament. I mean, try that during the Middle Ages, during the Crusades, right? I mean, okay, we got another one. String him up, cut his head off, drain his blood, feed him to the dogs, have a nice day. But Christianity has become less and less and less about Christianity in order to stay relevant, especially in the age of information. A couple more, just because. Kathy, hi. Are you with me?
Hi, Seth. I am.
What's on your mind?
I've been enjoying listening to all the conversations going on.
Thank you. What are you thinking? What do you have to contribute to the conversation today?
Well, I have a question I've had for a long time and never really gotten a good answer to. Why are so...
Now I feel pressure. Shit. No. Sorry. Go ahead. I interrupted. Go ahead, Kathy. What's your question?
That's okay. Why are so many hospitals and medical systems run by religions?
I don't know. I know someone in this audience knows.
Somebody
like, why is there, like, in this town, we have a St. Francis, and we have a St. John, and we had an osteopathic hospital, and there's St. Jude's, and all of those hospitals. How did it come to be so religion-centered? Was it, were places of medical help hundreds and hundreds of years ago, were they organized or sort of dominated by the church and it continued? I am just as curious as you are. Forgive my ignorance, but maybe someone in the comments can contribute, or maybe someone will send me an email, but I have no answer to your question, Kathy. Do you have any knowledge about it?
No, I don't. I grew up in Central Texas outside of Austin, and I remember the Catholic hospitals. And everyone talked about how if the question came between your life and your baby's life, that they would take the baby and let the mother die. And, that sort of thing is what I grew up with. And then there are so many churches and medical groups that are run by religions, and they are not nonprofit, as far as I am aware. There are for-profit hospitals, of course, but they are not the norm. Most of them seem to be religion-based, and that just bothers me a great deal.
I think it should. I always find it ironic they're praying for healing at the bedside of somebody who's been admitted to the hospital. I don't really understand that. Let me, as we finish the call, let me run over to the comments and see if our listeners have any wisdom, and perhaps they can fill in the blanks that I could not, okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Kathy. We'll see you later.
Thank you, Seth.
All right, yeah, let me just browse this real fast and see. They're coming in so quickly, and I'm doing this single-handedly. Hospitals started by the Catholic Church as places that even the very poor could get shelter and a meal. By default, they ended up caring for the sick. That's from One-Eyed Heathen. They can afford to build hospitals because they don't pay taxes, meaning the churches. Hospitals were run by the church in the Middle Ages, says Dave. Medical care from the church goes back to the bubonic plague. Churches taking care of the ill when they were abandoned. That's Colorado Biker.
Saint Anthony created the first hospital. Is that true? I think that's all. I think people have moved on to the next point. That's a good question. That's a good question. We may have to do a pod, like a whole show, on the church involved in, you know, in medicine. Like St. Francis, right? I've had people go in, they have surgery, we go up to visit them. There's a freaking crucifix in every room. It's a crucifix. If I was in there, I'd be like, take that shit down till I check out. If you would. Paul in Houston. Hi, thanks for waiting. Are you with me?
Hey, Seth. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. What are you thinking, Paul? What's on your mind?
Good to talk to you again, my friend. I got a lot on my mind. I'll try to keep it short for both of our benefit.
Yeah.
You talked about Clinton and Lewinsky earlier, and I thought that was a fitting tie-in to what I called about, which was prostitution. It's been on my mind for the last few years. It's one of those topics that, you know, growing up, so you might remember I was raised in a Methodist household by atheist parents. And so we sort of had the education and culture of the church, but we didn't really adopt the rituals, you know, the prayers over our meals and all that stuff. And so my parents were and still are lifelong Democrats. And when that, you know, so-called scandal broke out, I remember them being very angry. I was in high school at the time. I wasn't paying attention to the news, but I remember them being very angry, like literally what you said, this is none of our business. Why is this an issue? And in hindsight, given everything Trump has done, it seems laughable that there would be a news cycle about, you know, a guy with an affair. But,
you know, it's funny as you're speaking, it's like you don't want to reward people who are reckless and showing constant poor judgment, right? You know, but I think, you know, JFK, I hear he was kind of, he was that guy, right? But I mean, did JFK, did that make him a poor president? I don't think that's the qualifier, right? I just don't think that you point a moral finger at him and say, you know, he's a screw up over here, therefore he's awful over here. I don't think it quite works like that. You know, in my binary thinking days, I was just ready to set fire to the guy. You know, I'm not a Clinton fan. I'm not coming to his defense. I just think it was none of my business. Right? So I get you.
Yeah. And it felt like an indictment against women, which I feel like, you know, all this focus on sexuality and, you know, marriage and all that is really just an attack on women. And that's why I think it ties into the prostitution topic that I was thinking about. And Matt Dillahunty and a few others inspired me to finally read the whole freaking Bible, which I did over the pandemic. It's a challenge I always had for myself I never could do until now. And having read it, the whole thing is just an indictment against women and especially against prostitution. But I had this thought, and I wanted to run it by you to see what you thought about it. The Bible seems to endorse a man essentially buying a woman from a family, right? So if we can imagine that a guy, that a woman is a prostitute and has one client who pays for that service and pays the family a dowry and then marries her, it's essentially an arranged marriage. And I know that's a different context than an actual arranged marriage, but on paper, it sounds like prostitution would just be, you know, the first step into an arranged marriage by biblical standards. So it feels like there's a little bit of hypocrisy for them to condemn this one act of paying for sexual services, but then be okay with the approval of basically buying a bride where the woman has no say. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but it just didn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I have to chew on that one. I think if someone is, you know, if a father type figure, if they are essentially shopping out their daughter or their wife to be a prostitute, I consider that to be a form of slavery. And therefore, an arranged marriage would also, by an extension, be a form of slavery. I think that's different than somebody who was just doing sex work, who was doing so autonomously, you know. But, you know, there's no doubt that throughout the Bible, sex and women, the sex shaming and the blaming and the marginalizing and the purity culture stuff, and hell, even if you look at rape, And the rape against women was not an assault on the woman. It was not a violation of the woman. It was a property crime against the man, against her father or husband. And so I think you have a lot of good points about how the sexual shaming of women has manifested in so many incarnations throughout Scripture. And it's something I think we need to draw a circle around as we talk to believers in the Bible.
Yep, I agree. Thank you.
That's all I got, brother.
I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Paul. We'll see you later. 757, who's this?
This is Emily.
Hi, Emily.
Hi. I think it was your last live recording, that I had asked you about approaching death in the family with somebody that did not leave the theological aspect alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to thank you because I gave it another shot at just wording it different. And I was able to have just a conversation with her. And I really appreciate, you know, giving perspective so that I kind of felt like, yeah, I can try one more time. That was it.
There were no raised voices. There was no anger in the moment.
No. Because of the rephrasing, like, I kind of tried to approach more of it, you know, how is your heart feeling? Like, you know, instead of, you know, how are you dealing with everything? I tried to make it as personal as possible so that maybe she would identify more with, I'm actually hurting.
You made it about human beings, and that's amazing. That's amazing. Your success just warms my heart. It just makes me so freaking happy. So thanks for letting me know. And I know it's not easy out there, but you know, you opened some perspectives. You opened dialogue. You created a moment of human connection. You did all the hard work on that one. I just told you it was okay. So thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good
day. All right. Take care. See you later. Oh, yeah. That's gutsy. You go back into a conversation with kind of a fundy religious person that has been going consistently south, and you dread, and you just sort of change how you approach, and you have success. Hey, that's a rush. That's a good feeling. We'll call it a show. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for being a part of this community. I'll see you back here next week as I celebrate my birthday with you, my fellow birthday partiers. Gonna be a good time. I'll see you then.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.